Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Andy, we're getting ready for playoffs. And you know what? It's a home game first for the Nittany Lions. But after that, yes, I know they got to beat SMU. But they get past that. They start to travel. And if you want to follow your team as they progress, let me introduce you to Collegiate Athletic Travel. They're the folks that they charter the flights, they set up the hotels, get tickets. In other words, if you're looking to travel with the team, you hook up with Collegiate Athletic Travel, and they will take care of everything for you. Obviously, they got to get past SMU, but once they do, everything will start to fall into place. If you want more information, check out athletictravel.com. They'll be loading more and more information as we get closer, or you could call 814-238-4987. And again, the website is athletictravel.com. I got the chance to travel with them last year. It was fantastic. They take care of everything for you. All right, Andy, it is playoff time, but before we get there, as usual, I'm going to give you the opportunity for the final thoughts. Penn State, Oregon, conference championship game. I know early in the game, you were the most negative Nelly in the world. You're sending me text. Oh, my God, it's a dumpster fire, on and on and on. Well, a lot of things changed in the game. Your thoughts.
Yeah, first of all, it was a fantastic football game, right? Like, it was a great championship game. It wasn't one-sided. It was a pretty evenly matched game. Early on, overall, I was disappointed in the performance of both defenses, because both of these defenses came in top 10 overall, and they weren't getting, you know, pushed around, or, you know, they weren't struggling. Both of them were getting just simply run over by the offense. So this was an offensive game. I think Penn State's defense was next level disappointing for me. Just the first three series, Jimmy, and Oregon, it was just so easy and so simple. And Oregon went fast, and they were comfortable and confident. And Penn State looked completely unprepared. Now, the defense for Penn State found its sea legs and did adjust and sort of, you know, had a little bit more impact on the game. But overall, when I was talking about that, I just was like, it was just too easy and they looked so unprepared. But overall, I just thought the offenses, it was just so much fun to watch those two offenses perform like that. It was a little bit easier for Oregon overall because they had more assets. In other words, Oregon's wide receivers, what we talked about last week leading up the game, they had a massive impact on the game, right? Penn State doesn't have that ability with its wide receivers. Both offensive lines, Jimmy, this is my last thought. They were simply out of this world good, both of them. Neither quarterback was under a lot of duress and heat and was able to sort of, you know, do what they wanted to do. And lastly, I'll say, Drew Rowler, you know what? He performed like a five-star on a big stage, and he showed next-level leadership. Those are my takeaways from what was a fantastic football game as part of a very good championship Saturday. The Big Ten game, including Penn State and Oregon, was just part of a fantastic college football Saturday.
It was a great weekend of football. First, couple of questions on the game itself. I'm sure Penn State fans are looking at that performance by their defense and saying, oh my goodness, this is a concern going forward. The interesting thing is, especially after the start of the game, it's hard to wrap your mind around the fact is Penn State actually had more total yards than Oregon did.
Right.
And I know that doesn't count, and so it's on the scoreboard, but right. Are Oregon fans doing the same thing, Andy, saying, oh, my God, did did Penn State's offense expose our defense?
Yeah, they are. A really good friend of mine is a massive Oregon fan. And he's like, hey, his take was either team could have won this game. And I think our team needs to work on their defense before we play in the Rose Bowl. And I'm like, I'll say this. Oregon's defense, you know what Penn State did to them? They physically manhandled them, right? That was the surprising thing from Penn State's perspective offensively. They manhandled Oregon's defense. I mean, physically kind of push them around and shove the ball down their throat. Penn State's defense, if struggles were in the secondary in terms of coverages, it was a lot of wide open space, a lot of what would look like blown coverages. Oregon's offense is complex and it's very well coordinated, and it just caught Penn State a little underprepared. They did adjust quicker. It didn't take till halftime to get in. They came to the game quicker and got their sea legs, and they really did actually, I thought, played pretty well over the last 2.5 quarters, the Penn State defense, in terms of the way the game was going. So, yes, it brought a little concern for both defenses, but in the end, both of these defenses are structurally still pretty good, and they were both top 10 going in for a reason. That tells you how, at what level, both offenses played in that particular football game. It was off the charts good offensively by both teams. The full assets that each one had that were their strengths were on full display. Tyler Warren and Penn State's running backs, Dylan Gabriel pulling the strings of that offense, and those wide receivers running all over the field. They don't throw the ball very deep, but when they do, it's with a purpose, and it usually hits pretty good because they're a little – they like to pick at you. They're one of the shortest, if not the shortest, yards per attempt in the country because they basically use the pass game as a running game. They took on Penn State's secondary early and threw middle to deep routes early to get them off balance, and they executed it very well. Both offenses were off the charts, Jimmy. Fun to watch.
And Dylan Gabriel was very impressive, Andy. And let me throw out something, a theme that we're going to bring up again in this show. In talking about playoffs and selecting teams, the question often is best team versus most deserving team, okay?
Ooh.
I think Oregon is most deserving to be the number one team in the country.
Absolutely.
If you look at it, Andy, they're undefeated. The number two ranked team had 3-4. They all have two losses.
Correct.
Notre Dame, I know, has one. But do you think about this, Andy? In the 10 years of the 4-team playoffs,
right?
There's never been a two-loss team in that 4-team playoffs. Do you realize that if they were still doing a 4-team playoff, we might have 3 2-loss teams in it this year?
That's what the consolidated conferences. It was bound to happen that way with the consolidated conferences, Jimmy, because the balance of power isn't spread out. It's more consolidated. It's more compact, and they have to play each other, right? There's more quality football games in weeks 1 through 12, right? Well, so it's bound to be the 2-loss team was bound to happen.
And you're right. And I had someone, it was my brother. I was chatting with him yesterday, and we were talking about, you know, everyone having 2 losses. His question was, is this the transfer portal effect? And I gave it a thought for a second, and my answer was the same as yours. No.
Yeah.
And it's that the realignment of conferences. And if you think about it, Oregon coming into the Big Ten, if they had stayed in the Pac-12, they obviously would have been their representative. Ohio State probably would not have had 2 losses.
Right.
Texas would have still been in the Big 12. They probably would not have had 2 losses. And it just keeps the domino effect. Alabama would not have played Georgia in the regular season, takes away a loss from Georgia, so it would be very different. But anyway, my question about most deserving versus best team, and like I said, that's going to be a theme in our show, talking about Oregon. obviously the most deserving to be the number one team. But are they the best team in the country?
Right, I think they are right now, Jimmy. They are the team that is most capable to dictate the outcome of a game, and they can play any style. They're a chameleon. They can play a high scoring shootout game. They can play a keep it close to the vest and lean on their running game and make their defense, you know, perform and win a game for them. So they stand out that way to me, that they're capable of playing any type of game. Don't forget, they're healthy right now. They're about as healthy. They were as healthy for that Big Ten championship game as they had been in about a month, Jimmy. So they're healthy at the right time. You can never forget that. And they're sort of comfortable and confident in their sort of little Eugene, Oregon football bubble. They're very comfortable and confident on the big stage who they are inside the bubble. They don't see themselves as the best team in the country. They see themselves as the best football team, you know, in their conference. That's the way they don't look at it big picture. It's very unusual, but they're very confident in the little in their Eugene, Oregon bubble.
I think, Andy, what you're saying is they can concede we may not be the most talented team, but we can still beat you.
Yeah, they're not quote unquote a blue blood. They're an elite program, but are they one of college football blue bloods? Do you ever think of Oregon when you name the 5, 6, 7, 8 college football blue bloods? You don't, but they're okay with that. And they're comfortable and confident on this big stage being okay with that. That's a little, you know, sometimes you get the imposter syndrome or the Napoleon syndrome. They don't have any of that. They don't think it's us versus the world. It's us, you know, nobody respects us. You never hear that kind of stuff coming out of Oregon. So they're just kind of comfortable in who they are, and they can play any style. They're very chameleon-like, Jimmy. They have a tough draw, though. We'll talk more about it, but they have a tough draw.
And we will definitely get to that, Andy, as we continue. Make sure you stick with us after this quick break. With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at 4 major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello, and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Belanti. It's quarter number two of our show. Andy, we know playoff football is coming to Happy Valley next week. A lot of folks are excited about it. You know what folks are not excited about, Andy? The cost of a hotel room. It's getting crazy in State College, Andy. How about this for a little bit of a different idea for you? If you're still looking for a place to stay for the game, how about checking out GoPSU RV? This is where they have the RV there ready and waiting for you. You just drive up. The RV's there ready for you for the weekend. Couple limitations because of cold weather to be anticipated. But instead of them gouging you with their prices going up, Andy, they're actually going down for this game. Some special pricing. Need to check it out if you're still looking for a place to stay. You can go to gopsurv.com or call directly 800 519-8467. You talk to my buddy Mark over there. He'll take care of you, help you out. I've stayed there multiple times. It's a great way to enjoy the entire weekend. Check it out if you're still looking for a place to stay for the game. All right, Andy, when we finished quarter number one, you were talking about Oregon, and it struck me when you said something about Oregon being in their own little bubble, not the first team we think of when we think of the Blue Bloods right. In college football. I think that is true. Do you think part of that also is that they're on the West Coast, Pac-12, us East Coast bias people don't see them enough? Do you think this move to the Big Ten and the fact that NIL is going to be such a big factor and we know how well they're going to play in that world, maybe in a couple of years we will change how we view Oregon?
They could be, and how they perform on this big stage as the number one overall seed will matter. They've already won a Big Ten championship, but yeah, the move to the Big Ten did favor them. There is the West Coast bias you talked about. The fact that they are a West Coast team. I mean, you don't hear about going to a game at Autzen Stadium in Eugene as many people's sort of college football bucket list. It should be. It is one of those five places that is, you know, the Big House, the Rose Bowl, a whiteout at Penn State. Those are all, they all fit. I'd say a game between the hedges in, you know, Athens, Georgia. I think Autzen Stadium is one of those. It is. I've been there. It's spectacular. It's a great football atmosphere. They're comfortable and confident in being just the team from the West Coast.
Well, Andy, you know what? It's interesting you bring that up. I hadn't thought about it. But think about the four teams that came in from the Pac-12 to the Big Ten. And think of their venues. You've got the Rose Bowl. You got the Coliseum. You got Oregon, Washington. Four great places to watch college football.
Yeah, there in Seattle for the Washington Huskies on the water, and that stadium, absolutely gorgeous. But Autzen Stadium is
atmosphere. Tailgate on your boat, right, Andy?
Yeah, tailgate on your boat. Yeah, right. That's not you and I, Jimmy. We're not boat guys. But anyway, Oregon has never taken that and considered themselves the little man and sort of played the card. They don't do it. And that's why they're comfortable in their own bubble.
All right, let's talk about this Nittany Lion team, Andy. Yes. It's interesting coming out of that game, and I'm comparing it to the Rose Bowl against USC a few years ago when Penn State lost, and it was a great game. And I remember not feeling too upset by the loss, essentially because there were no repercussions. That was the last game.
Right.
You know, you don't miss the playoffs for losing that game. And I kind of get the same feeling out of this, that Penn State fans, hey, it didn't cost them a playoff berth, and maybe in some ways the seeding is actually better. But you had to be so impressed with this Penn State offense. Did they turn a corner with this game, Andy?
I think they had been kind of building to a performance. Like, let's just say they've done it for halves or in stretches, but Oregon basically forced them into a go mode now, right from kind of the jump, right? So they had to meet them, and they were chasing points the entire game, but they weren't getting outpaced in that chase, right? Like, they were chasing. They were always chasing the tail of the dog, and they performed chasing. They've done that in spurts this season. Minnesota a little bit, USC, right? Like, they've had to perform in stretches. They performed well. First half against Washington, impressive, right? Second quarter against Maryland late in the year, impressive. They've done it in stretches. This was a long haul. They did it for basically 60 minutes, Jimmy. They performed at an exceptionally high level offensively across the board in all phases, running game, quarterback, tight end play calling. It was all next level stuff over basically 60 minutes. And I don't think it's necessarily turned a quarter. I just think it strung it all together in 60 minutes. Is that what the expectation should be going forward? I don't know, but it shows that they're capable of doing it if necessary over a long haul. That's a big step.
Okay, now entering the playoffs, just how good is this Penn State team, Andy?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Remember, you know, way back in August, we talked about, you know, the way the first year of the college football and the new Big Ten and the college football 12 team, that their schedule was opportunistic with the roster they had, right? Like, they had two new coordinators, but we knew the roster. It wasn't an easy road, right? They had to show some toughness, particularly on the road, and win in a couple of very tight spots. But they found ways to win when a loss would have been just as easy to explain, right? That's one that stood out to me. They underperformed against Ohio State again. They just simply did. But here's what I know about this Penn State team. When the roster from top to bottom favors Penn State, that eventually is showing up, right? At some point in the Big Ten championship game, showed up for a long stretch. They've been difficult to beat over 60 minutes. Teams have enjoyed some decent spells success against Penn State, but they won 11 regular season games. It was an equal roster last Saturday, right? And that was about as good as I've seen a Penn State team perform with an equal roster in probably 2 to 3 years. I think there was one Michigan game in there where they were on equal footing and they performed well in the last few years. But I'd say that was about as good when everything being equal. I know they lost the game, but they performed on a level that was equal to the number one seed in the tournament. That's what I know about this Penn State team, and that's how good I think they are.
Andy, I have a theory. I think this team is pretty good comparing it with the last few years, which there have been some good Penn State teams, if not elite, as James Franklin would call it. I think what gives them a fighting chance in this tournament is that I think the rest of the pack has come back to Penn State. We saw Oregon, I think, is the best team and the most deserving team where they are because they haven't been beaten. But I don't see the team like I had over the last several years at Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State. So I think the elite, I'm not sure there's an elite team in the playoffs.
No, I would agree with you. And this is where the point you were asking about when you were having your conversation with your brother about the transfer portal. This is where the dispersion of talent in the transfer portal becomes a little bit more tangible to look at as we're still navigating the wild, wild west in the early years of this. Some would argue that it's watered down. I don't agree with that. I think it's created a little more deeper parity. Instead of the talent being compacted in a
tighter, it's dispersed.
It's dispersed more evenly, and therefore you're getting 12 teams, 13 teams, 14 teams, 15 teams that all feel they have a right or a case to be made to be part of the college football playoff. And I think you're going to continue to see that. That is what I think you're seeing. I think Penn State is doing a better job of developing talent that it brings in, which is the bones of how you do it in the transfer portal area. They're developing better than most. And that's, I think we're seeing that this year, that the bones, the development of the talent that they recruit and bring in on their own, not the talent that transfers in, across the board, not all the places, but across the board, they're developing it better than most. And that is the meat and potatoes of who they are.
And Andy, I think when you talk about that, the talent getting spread out a little more, so it, the easiest position to look at this is at quarterback.
Right.
And it's fascinating to me. Before the season, we looked at the Big Ten and how many, the majority of starting quarterbacks in the Big Ten were portal guys. Now, if you look at this, you know, these 12 teams that are in the playoffs, you see teams like Texas, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Indiana, Oregon. They're all playing with a transfer quarterback, Andy.
Yeah, the quarterback position, I think, is going to be closer in the next year or two to the 80-20 rule. 80% of your starters, particularly for the playoff teams, I would say it's either 70 or 80% are going to be transfer portal guys. The exception will be the guy who stays at the school and develops and stays at one school. That will be more the exception, I think, going forward. Look at all the ones that have already entered the portal and we're just starting the first window right now.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. And it's going to be a story that we're going to have to follow through the off season. But I also think there are different ways to win. And I think at Penn State, they're not bringing in a transfer portal quarterback. They haven't done it. And the only quarterbacks who have left for the portal are guys who were not going to play. So you can't argue, oh, my goodness, Penn State lost that kind of talent.
Correct.
And I think that'll be a storyline that we'll take a look at during the offseason, Andy. But right now, that's it for quarter two. It's time for your questions and ask Andy. Stay tuned for that.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello, welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. That means it's time to ask Andy. We will take your questions for Andy, and Andy will give you a spectacular answer. And if he doesn't, I will tell him why he is wrong. If you want to send in a question to Andy, very easy. Just download our app, Keystone Sports. You'll see the Ask Andy button. And Andy, opportunity to talk about the app. Yes, we had issues this week with the app. No fault of us or the people who, you know, host the app. It was a longer issue that I don't want to get into. Everything should be taken care of now. We're going to continue to make some modifications to it going forward. I thank you for your patience. All right, Andy, you ready to go?
I am, Jimmy. I will say this. I'll be interested to hear the questions this week because When Penn State loses a football game, there's a you can tell, right? Like I think this is, I don't know why, and this was for a championship. It just feels different this week.
I think it's about it's all about the playoffs, Andy.
Right.
If losing that game, yeah. If this were the 14 playoff and they needed to win that game to get into the playoffs,
you're right.
The tone would be much different.
Well done,
all
Jimmy.
Right.
Give
all right. One. This one came very early on in the week, or last week, but I do want to get to it, Andy. Eric from Speculator, New York, via Quakertown, says, Andy, I know we share a general dislike of Ryan Day. Comparing Day's action after the Michigan game to Franklin's action after the USC game speaks volumes. Just to explain real quickly, Michigan, Ohio State after the game, the tussle. Ryan Day just looked like he was in a daze, lost. Penn State, USC, some of the Penn State players were looking to plant the flag. Franklin was going to have none of that. All right. Franklin may have lost today on the game field, but in the game of life, Franklin is winning. My question for you is, after the melee, after the Ohio State-Michigan game, do you think any of the coaching staff or players involved should have been suspended? $100,000 fine for each team is couch change and is meaningless. Losing players or a coach going into the playoffs would be a far stiffer penalty and maybe a better deterrent.
Yeah, that's a really good question, Eric. I wish I had the ability. First of all, I just want to say, you know what I ran across over the weekend, Jimmy? I ran across a video of Ryan Day from the pretty much the minute that game ended. Somebody followed them around on their phone and posted the entire time. They were doing the Ohio State song thing they do. And I was stunned. I thought he was just outside the box. He literally just stood there, like on the outside watching. Like, he just stood there. So he was negligent. I wasn't sure of that before, and I wasn't looking to be sure of that, but I found the ability to be sure. He was negligent. I think if they were going to play hardball with this, and I don't think the conference wants to this time of year, that's just the dollars and cents of college football.
And they Andy, don't want to. This is the Big Ten. It's Ohio State and Michigan. It's not the Big Ten. It's the Ohio State and Michigan Conference. They're not going to do squat.
The $100,000 is a slap on the wrist. Let's just call it
what it is. It's not even that, Andy.
Might be a slap on the hand.
What I think has to happen is the conferences are the ones with the power. The NCAA has no power anymore.
Correct.
The conference just got to say, no, you do not do this. You don't do that planting the flag crap. You don't end up with a melee at the end of the game. Michigan, Ohio State is like the Big Ten and even NCAA football's biggest game of the year. That's not what they want to have as the memory of this game. That, yes, Eric, they should have come down hard. They won't. We knew they weren't. Move on. All right, let's get to Jimmy, our buddy from Forest City. He says, Andy and Jim, Penn State's the number 3 team in the nation, but only the number 16 or 17 ranked team in the early signing period. We are obviously not paying the top talent enough money to sign them. Why can't Penn State do better in this area, and will the NIL playing field level out in the coming years?
Whoo, that's a mouthful, Jimmy. That is a lot. Will the NIL level playing field level out? At Penn State, I think James Franklin is working on solutions, and the athletic director and the NIL collectives, to level the playing field. I think that is a work in progress. I think at almost every individual position, maybe except for one, on the Penn State roster, I think you have to start looking at their performance and their talent development over strictly just their sort of blind recruiting stars and positions. Look at you take the recruiting class and then look at it 18 to 24 months later, and then you're going to find out what's going on. So I think their development is exceptionally high on the chart. But that is not ranked. That's not something that's looked at. So in the measurables, they might not be as successful. But in the unmeasured, I think they're killing it.
And Andy, a couple thoughts on all of this. Penn State had a slow start on NIL. They're catching up. They're doing much better.
I agree.
All indications are.
Yes, they are.
They also are a little different in how they handle their NIL. They're not looking to make the big splash in free agency at the expense of the guys who've been here and earned it. Yep. Okay. Like you saw the Ole Miss example, they brought in all their players and their star running back said, "Hey, what about me?" And he moved on to Ohio State.
Correct.
So I think things are getting better. The other thing to remember is soon the schools will be able to pay the players directly. Yep. There's a $20 million amount. Now, you can still do NIL over and above, and that's going to happen.
Correct.
But the floor is going to get a little more balanced.
There's a double dip coming for the players.
Yes. All right, let's move on. Let's get George from Hamilton, Ontario asks, will Tyler Warren enter the NFL draft? George, I'll take this one. The answer is yes.
George.
I actually believe he's out of eligibility, but even if he weren't, he's going to be a first round draft pick.
Yeah, he was part of Senior Day against Maryland, so he's done. And he will be a first round draft pick.
Yes. So with that being the case, and even if he had the option to come back, George, when you are a first round draft pick, it's generally it's time to go. Go cash in. All right, next up is Brad from Perkasie, who says, two questions.
Uh-oh.
Andy, how did you feel about the refs and their effect on the game versus Oregon?
Good question.
Does James Franklin need to win at least two playoff games to satisfy fans' expectations, with getting SMU in the first round and Boise State in the second round if they win?
First one, the officiating in the Big Ten Championship game was poor across the board. And it wasn't, I'm not looking at it through Penn State glasses. I'm looking at it from college football fan glasses. It was just bad officiating. It was bad technique. It was bad. They were in the way. They just were bad and in the way. Their mechanics were poor. Their execution of stuff was poor. It was just sloppy all around. I don't think those teams were playing at such a high level offensively that they were able to rise above that and create a game that, while the officiating was poor, they didn't have a direct impact.
Andy, yeah, before we hit the second part of the question, I want to respond to that, and I think this is very telling. We have on our show Dustin Schutte, who he's a Midwest guy. He's a Big Ten writer, all of the Big Ten. And he's from Indiana, so he's from the Indiana-Purdue, you know, perspective on a lot of things. I wanted to get his perspective on the officiating. I did not get a chance to ask him the question, Andy, because he brought it up first.
Okay.
Yeah. And he said, "Jim, I can't understand it. What that was so bad, and it was against Penn State." And you know,
it was a little slanted. Yes.
I think specifically, Andy, the catch that they ruled not a catch and didn't even review it.
Just awful.
It was terrible. You couldn't tell who called what was called on the field.
Mechanics.
The people in the review booth, it was obvious it was a catch. I mean, it wasn't even in question, and they didn't review it. And I think the other example was the Oregon touchdown pass, when there's been an emphasis on RPOs, they call the offensive lineman downfield now.
Yep.
And they do it when they're like 2 or 3 yards down the field.
He was 5 yards downfield.
Yes.
Yeah, that was an easy call. They blew two against Penn State. That he is correct. They were just awful across the board. And Penn State got the two worst calls. Yeah, it was just bad, Jimmy. Brad's right.
And think about it. This is the conference's championship game. I assume they put out their best. And if that's their best, Andy, holy cow.
They need to do some officiating recruiting in the Big Ten if that's their best. The second question, yes. I think Penn State, look at the matchup. I mean, there's like 11 college teams in this, you know, there's like 6 other college football playoff teams that are like, man, I wish I was in Penn State slot. Man, I wish I was in Penn State slot.
They got
a pretty darn good call.
You started to say 11 other teams.
Ones they got to play.
I think you're right. You know, yeah. I think almost everybody, and maybe that's also part of why Penn State fans are not so upset. Oregon, and we're going to talk about this. Oregon's reward for being the number one seed? Tennessee or Ohio State. All right, Andy, that's it for quarter 3. We're going to talk about the playoffs when we come back.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pregame meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy, I'm Jim. It's quarter number four of our show. Everyone, Andy, getting ready for playoff football at Beaver Stadium home field. And I tell you what, if you're making plans for your tailgate and you want some help, Revel XP is the way to go. This is the place with the big white tents. They set up the tents, the tables. They have TVs. They have heaters, Andy, even. They even can line you up with catering. And the great thing, they do all the setup. They do the turn down, breakdown. You just show up for your tailgate. This is definitely the way to do tailgating. I'm a veteran tailgater. I love Revel XP and the way they handle it. If you want to find out more, go to revelxp.com or call 814-933-4100. It's a great way to tailgate. Check it out. You won't regret it. It's the best way. It's no fuss tailgating. They take care of everything for you, and it's a great place and a great setup. All right, Andy, let's move forward. We've got playoffs coming.
Here we go.
And, well, let's start with this. Before I ask you the general question about how the committee did, let's talk about the huge question. SMU, Alabama, did they get that right?
Here's the other interesting. It was SMU or Alabama. What wasn't Miami wasn't part of the consideration. I would say, but I'm sorry that Alabama, the SEC cry towel, it just doesn't carry weight with me. I you lost to Vanderbilt. Okay, good teams lose games. I get it. You can have one of those. But you got gobsmacked and outright obliterated by Oklahoma as well, in addition to. So that's and you didn't score a single touchdown that game. So I know SMU lost to BYU early. They lost to Clemson in the ACC title game. You know, I know that. And it was a last gasp field goal. The committee chose a championship game loser over a wobbly three-loss roller coaster. That was their decision in the end. They were like, we don't care that Alabama's a blue blood. We don't care that they're from the SEC. They're just a wobbly three-loss roller coaster a bit. And we think this team has more merit, and that's who they chose. I didn't have a problem with it.
Andy, early on in our show, I said this was going to be a theme. It would come up again with who's the better team versus who's deserving, which has been the debate. Has been the debate forever, you know, with the playoff committee. And here are my thoughts. I try hard not to be critical of people in the media. National media, especially, but Paul Feinbaum is an idiot. Okay,
yeah, he's becoming more of a like blowhard Homer. Like it's just It's not a good look.
Gee, who do you think he says should have made it? Obviously, the whole world, without even listening, knows it's Alabama. And his whole argument is this: Alabama's a better team than SMU. There's no doubt. The problem is when you start just on those stark terms, you're saying, well, Alabama's better than Vanderbilt. You and I both know that, Andy.
Right.
So the loss to Vanderbilt shouldn't count.
Right. Like, it doesn't matter who you play and who you beat and who you lose. It just matters that you have a better roster. Okay, well, then we could have seeded this in August. Right? Like, we could have done this in August if that's the philosophy you're going under. What happens over the course of 12 games matters.
Exactly. What happens on the field has to matter. Besides that, by the way, I agree. Alabama is probably better than SMU.
Absolutely.
But you know what? They didn't win on the field.
They're not more deserving, right? They were not more deserving than SMU.
Exactly. Now, let's look at the rest of the seeding, Andy, and I'll go through it very quickly because I know you have been in the past very critical of the playoff committee. Oregon, Georgia, Boise State, and Arizona State are the top four seeds. Boise State and Arizona State are in there because of the conference championship. They were actually ranked 9th and 12th, respectively. Then you've got, starting at number 5, Texas, Penn State, Notre Dame, and Ohio State getting the home games in that first round. And then 9 through 12 is Tennessee, Indiana, SMU, and Clemson going on the road for the first round of games. Your thoughts?
So based on the rules they had to work with, right, in this first year, and everyone's looking at the seeding and goes, what are Arizona State and Boise State? Well, they had to be, you had to have, there's going to be 5 champions. You had to include 4 of them.
It was the rules.
Based on what they had to do, they did the best job in the end that they could. In other words, what I'm saying is, if we didn't have this rule in place for this year, we would still be in a hotel conference room somewhere arguing about a 12-team playoff.
Andy, let me interrupt you. The top 4 teams, I think Oregon, Georgia are there deservedly. Boise State and Arizona are there because they have to be based on the rules. So I think it becomes the rest, 5 through 12. Did they get it right? That's where their judgment came into play.
So I think they have to make an adjustment on the go, right? They have to eliminate the rule that got them to this in the first place, which was the conference championship. That's what the conference wanted. But it can't look like this seeding-wise going forward. They know they're going to have to change it. I don't know if it happens for next year, but we can't be 3 years down the line and have this still in place, right? Because it's not a balanced seeding process. You can get in. It's just like the NCAA basketball tournament. You can get in and you can get an automatic berth where your seeding is based on your performance. Performance, performance, performance. A championship is only a 1-game performance. We're looking at 12 and 13 games.
Again, Andy, they did that that top 4. Again, it's the argument, and we're going to be talking about that, I'm sure, a lot during the offseason about changing the rules. But based on the rules, what did the committee get anything else wrong?
No, I don't think they did. Honestly, based on the rule they had to, and they were playing when they announced them week to week, I now understand, and I said this a couple weeks ago, maybe they're playing the long game. They were playing the long game. And in the end, they knew where they had to get, and they knew how to position, not maybe fully and holistically, but they got where they needed to get. But the interesting thing is, as you look at the field, Arizona State, SMU, Boise State, Indiana, and even Clemson, right? That's nearly half the field. That would have been laughable in August, right? Like when you were talking about candidates for the 12-team playoff, this sort of became laughable in August or September. It's a reality here in December that's almost, those are the teams that comprise half your field. So other than Clemson, here was the other interesting thing I found. other than Clemson, who had to be included because they won a championship. Nobody else with more than two losses made it, Jimmy. No, yeah. that was the cross that you stood on, and I'm like, well, we'll see how it plays out. That's how it played out, Jimmy.
Well, Andy, you know, it's like I talked for the decade of the 14 playoff.
Yeah.
Oh, you couldn't lose two games. You couldn't lose two games.
Yep.
Okay. Guess what? You know, one loss, two losses is now the new one loss. Okay.
Correct.
And what's fascinating, by the way, is if they still had the 14 playoff, we very likely could have had 3 2-loss teams in the tournament. But Andy, you mentioned that it's a good point. I hadn't thought about it. The Arizona State, Boise State, Indiana, SMU making it to the playoffs. Isn't that what this 12-team playoff is supposed to be about? That there are these other stories. There's the Cinderella stories, more schools having a chance to crash the party.
It does, especially as the conference realignment has moved towards a power two. It's now, you know, it's two power conferences. It's the SEC and Big Ten, but you can't leave the others behind, and the group of five still needs to be included and have a spot, not a seating, a spot. A seating will be based on merit. So that's what this is about. It's just, it's kind of weird the schools that have made it, right? Like from the Big Ten, Indiana? Yeah, they belong. They earned it. You know, Arizona State, I think, was picked to finish last or next to last in the Big 12. And who the heck is SMU? Where did they come from? Oh, they're in the ACC. I forgot about that, right? Like, and Boise State proved all season long, especially when they played Oregon, that they were the group of five that was the outlier. They belonged. And, you know, I still don't think they deserve a top four seed, but that's the rules we had.
And
that's the change that needs to come. But otherwise, it's going to look like this. There's going to be three or four teams that are going to be like, hey, we have a shot.
And maybe some of this exposure, Andy, will change the dynamics a little bit. You know, Ashton Gentry from Boise State got a lot of pub through the year because he was putting up insane numbers, and Boise Right. State was highly regarded. But we got a chance to see him. Arizona State, Scadaboo, the running back from Arizona State. The exposure that Arizona State will now get from being in this kind of a tournament, I think, is going to do worlds of good for that program.
Last point, Jimmy. It'll be interesting to see what the SEC particularly and the Big Ten do to adjust fire going forward, because they're not going to sit around and take this, particularly the SEC. They're not going to take this sitting down.
No, and I think the obvious one is the point you've been making the whole segment, Andy, which is this. Automatic seeding has to go away, and I suspect it'll go away as soon as they possibly can. All right, Andy, that's it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.